to Drivers, Morning Reads Inside Look into the Golf Industry. This is episode 3. I'm David Klein, along with Sports and Leisure Research Group President John Last. John, let's talk a little bit about what we've seen with respect to golf equipment sales. As you know, we've seen a nice significant lift this year, and that's really consistent with what our research has suggested even before the pandemic, isn't it?
That's right. And I mean, I know from an anecdotal standpoint, David, you've helped participate in the golf economy, upgrading your set recently. But as those who've been listening to Drivers and reading some of our published materials, there has certainly been a universal uptick in demand. We have seen, even from a forward-looking standpoint, folks continuing to suggest that their per capita expenditures on equipment continue to move in an upward direction, which we've found to be very much related and correlated to people's increased belief in continuing technology innovation. And I'd even suggest that launch monitors, as I've written about, provide that evidence, if you will, for even those that are not as serious about the game as the more avid players. They provide that visual demonstration that equipment can have an impact. And I'm thrilled, as you said, David, to have with us today probably the guy that I count on the most to really have an objective understanding of what's going on in the equipment market from a very agnostic perspective, and from the perspective, even more importantly, of Wall Street. Casey Alexander, who is joining us today, is the Senior Vice President and Golf Equipment Analyst at Compass Point Research and Trading. And Casey, welcome to Drivers. And excited to have you on here, and something that we always talk about informally, but would love to get your take as we move into the final weeks of this year. What are you looking at in the year ahead in equipment?
Well, thank you, John. And it's a real pleasure to join you and your team on this call today. You know, forecasting sales and forecasting demand for equipment, for particularly in the golf industry, has historically been an area where the visibility is extremely poor. Even the guys who run the golf equipment companies often don't have a great feel for demand and demand inputs more than one or at best two quarters out, which generally leads them to start the year with guidance that's very conservative and very achievable. But this year is kind of a unique year. When you look at the huge surge of equipment sales that took place, particularly in the second half of the year. And that's notable because there's a very strong seasonal pattern to golf club equipment sales, which, as you know, usually the high hump of that pattern is in the first half of the year. Well, the pandemic had everybody shut down for the first half of the year, and equipment sales took off like a scalded cat in the second half of the year. There is some things that we can project from that based upon the historical perspective of behavior in the distribution channel. And one of the things that we can expect is when there's been very, very strong sales in the second half of the year, it A, cleans out inventory, and B, gets the distribution channel excited about the prospects for the next year. And so one of the things you can logically expect to happen is for the members of the distribution channel, and by that we mean the Dick's, the Golf Galaxies, the Golf Smiths, the various greengrass shops around the country, who all experienced this surge in sales in the second half of the year, to order quite aggressively in the new product cycle for 2021. So we would therefore expect the first quarter and second quarter results for the golf club equipment company to be quite strong. We also learned those who are committed golfers who tend to play a lot of rounds every year, their actual year over year spend is down. So clearly a lot of the impulse of new sales that took place in the back half of this year came from newcomers and retreads to the game and not from your core constituency. Therefore, we would expect those core guys to catch up in the first half of next year. Those guys tend to lean towards premium product, high-priced, high-margin product, And that should augur very well for the participants in the distribution channel in terms of maintaining margins and improving their profitability.
So let's talk a little bit about the OEMs themselves and obviously the landscape that we've seen transform quite a bit over the past decade. What do you see? I mean, obviously there's been a lot of consolidation over that time period. We've kind of seen a top tier and a second tier emerge within the OEM space. How do you see that continuing to play out, given not only this influx of new equipment buyers, but what you just referenced and what our data has certainly shown in that, you know, per cap expenditures, that ceiling, if you will, for new equipment continues to elevate?
Yeah, it's a good question. And you know, it leads to the concept that the golf club equipment space on a global basis is really an oligopoly. All right. There are four companies that dominate the golf club equipment space, and that would be Callaway, Acushnet, which is the parent of Titleist, Ping, and TaylorMade. Though that domination generally results in the rich getting richer, simply because they have more levers in terms of available capacity to pull in order to adjust to shifting levels of demand. Your secondary and tertiary companies have to manage their capacity constraints to a much finer degree, and therefore they can't adjust as quickly to changes in demand, and they don't have the capital to retool operations in order to take advantage of a significant increase in demand. And frankly, the golf club equipment business over the longer term has been a 1-3% growing business. And a lot of that has been price taking, not unit taking. So if all of a sudden unit demand is about to really start to increase, those guys who have the flexibility to manage their capacity and take advantage of that, it's going to be the rich get richer, and the oligopoly will continue to strengthen.
Do you see further consolidation in the short term, or do you feel that those two tiers will still maintain themselves given differentiation points in them?
You know, you're actually less likely to have consolidation in a period where the demand inputs are very strong, because as you know, the people who run golf equipment companies, A, they love golf, and B, they're eternally optimistic about the long-term prospects of golf. So if they're getting paid off on their inventory right now, they're quite unlikely to sell. The golf club industry, especially because of its low growth profile, has really been a steel cage battle royale for market share. And as market shares shift, eventually one of the secondary or tertiary companies will make a marketing mistake that will result in them ending up with way too much inventory and significant losses. That's unlikely to happen in a period like this, but when it does happen, they can become financially damaged, they get behind the eight ball, and then they either leave the business or get consolidated by one of the larger companies who takes their brands and their intellectual property, tucks it into their own, and that brand tends to disappear. But that is less likely to happen in a period where we're seeing maybe a little bit of above average growth as compared to the historical trends.
So I guess the other impact, you know, from a diversification standpoint, from a line extension standpoint, is there's certainly been a lot of conjecture and conversation of late about the broadening of golf and different entry ramps. And obviously the entry ramp that's gotten the most attention is Topgolf. Callaway has always had a stake in Topgolf, just recently increased that stake to a controlling share. How do you see that playing?
Well, I think from a logical standpoint, you would have to say that the most important thing that the broader golf industry needs to do is that it needs to get a golf club into people's hands and get them to try golf. So if Topgolf does so in a way that is entertaining and inclusive, in general, that can only be good for the longer term demographics of golf. I do think that conversion takes a long time, but it's interesting that I believe that there's probably a lot of people who had tried Topgolf who during the pandemic, when Topgolf was largely shut down, probably did take that to the course and gave it a try on the course to see if it was much fun on the course as it was at Topgolf. Our expectation would be that some of those people will stick around with real golf, and the rest of those people will likely go back to Topgolf once Topgolf is fully open, vaccines are fully distributed, and people feel as though they're back to, air quotes, normal.
Looking ahead, Casey, in 2021, what does Wall Street have to say about all this? What do you see in terms of historical multiples for the sector, and how do you feel that the industry will be reacting to this in terms of their plans moving forward?
Well, that's a good question, David. And actually what Wall Street does is it runs ahead of the future. And, you know, the stock market is a discounting mechanism based upon its assessment of the future. So for instance, Acushnet is already currently trading at a significantly higher multiple than it has in relation terms. The interesting aspect of that from our standpoint, from an analytical standpoint, is that Acushnet is one of the least likely companies to immediately benefit from newcomers to the game. Acushnet is a company that is driven very tightly based upon the highly engaged and committed golfer. And that's not, you know, the people who come to the game now who are swapping over from Topgolf or trying it because other forms of entertainment aren't available to them are not really highly likely to be going out and buying a bunch of Titleist clubs. They're going to be looking more for game improvement sets, package sets. That's more in the wheelhouse of Callaway. And Callaway has kind of juxtaposed its valuation in the middle of all of this by engaging in an acquisition of Topgolf. So now they're in the actual golf equipment industry and the golfertainment industry. And so that creates a sort of a blended dynamic in terms of how you calculate its valuation.
Excellent perspective. We have just a little bit of time left. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you one more thing that I really wanted to cover off on. That's the retail landscape, which we've also seen change and consolidate in recent years. Certainly digital has played a much bigger presence, but we would maintain from our research that digital still really becomes a supplement to a process that we've studied to still be very hands-on and very trial-related. Any perspectives on that and what it portends for the landscape of retail?
Well, I think that retail, as it relates to the golf club equipment industry, has already been evolving into something that that still requires some in-person attention. And that's the drive towards custom fitting. The industry has found a way to make custom fit golf clubs generally as affordable as off the rack golf clubs, and setups like a Club Champion, which will do, you know, custom fitting and they will sell you the clubs, or they will do custom fitting and not sell you the clubs and allow you to acquire the clubs in your own manner. But there still requires some hands-on to get that equipment right. The off the rack sale and any type of club equipment sale that's off the rack in a digital format is a little more challenged. The accessories that surround that, like footwear and balls and gloves, I think have a high engagement to digital and online sales. And I think that's an area where they can really make some room to run. But when it comes to golf club equipment, especially for the engaged people who buy the most of the golf club equipment, they've learned that custom fitting is the way to go.
Absolutely. And certainly we'll have more to talk about that in future episodes. Casey, I wish we could go for much longer. This is just a great overview and certainly reflective of a lot of what I know you look at on a day-to-day basis and what we look at as well. Thank you so much for being with us. David, what do we have coming up in the next episode of Drivers?
So coming up in the next episode of Drivers, we'll be talking to a head of marketing of one of the most prestigious golf properties in the country. So you're not going to want to miss that. Casey, thanks so much for joining us. And we'll see everybody on the next episode of Drivers.